You are listening to episode 378 of the New World Order. My name is Klausy. I have a really great cup of coffee here that I am going to be sipping on throughout the episode. Try to do it quietly. Of course, midway through the show, as usual, we will have a coffee break, so you can go get yourself some coffee if you can think of that in advance. And I'll go get myself a refill. In this episode, we'll be talking about some of the packages that come pre-installed or that come installed with a Slackware Linux install. That's what we've been doing for the past couple of episodes. And by couple, I mean going back a year now, I think. Picking up right now in the AP software set of Slackware installed disks, or directories as the case may be, starting with N as in normalize. And that's exactly the application we'll be talking about first, and then we'll move on to PA Mixer, see where we go from there. So let's start talking about normalize, which is an audio processing application. Now, if you are not on Slackware, you may find normalize in your software repository as normalize-audio. That's not the name of the application, it's the name of the package and possibly the command after you install it. You'll just want to check in and see what they call it on your distribution, is my point. I know for a fact that Debian calls it normalize-audio. I guess I don't know it as a fact because I haven't used Debian in quite a while. Last time I used Debian, it was called normalize-audio, and that was a point of some confusion for some people, so just be aware of that. On Slackware, it's just called normalize, and I don't know if there's a man page for it. Is there? Yes, there is. Okay, well, I don't really look at the man page all that much. It is one of those commands that I just use the help menu, because it's all, after you read the man page, it becomes relatively self-explanatory. There aren't that many options, is what I'm trying to say. By default, what normalize works is that it analyzes the volume of whatever file or files you feed it, and then it adjusts, or it rather applies gain to increase the perceived volume of that file, or it limits the peak wavelengths to bring that volume down, thereby reaching ideally some very middle of the road average across the entire song. And from the numbers that it provides in the documentation, it is attempting to achieve an average amplitude of -12 decibels, or as it says, dBFS. And this is actually a distinction and term that I just learned about. I didn't realize that there was such a thing called dBFS, and I wonder if this explains an email that I got. It must have been 3-5 years ago now or something like that. Someone was saying that they'd been in the audio business for a while, and they had never heard of, I don't know, something that I was talking about in relation to decibels. And I think it might have been actually the level of sound. And it confused me as to why the difference would have been. And then someone, it might have been Taj. Why would Taj know about this? He might know about that sort of thing. From DevRandom. He chimed in, I think, or someone did, and was saying that there were sort of different expressions of what a decibel was referring to. And I don't remember the ultimate, the resolution of this, or even if we reached a resolution, but I know that in my in the couple of classes I did take before I dropped out of university in film, there was, in sound for film specifically, there was the industry standard is that there is a -12 or -15. It kind of depends on whether you're in film or in television. That's the standard average sound that you're looking for is -12. That's kind of your baseline, or rather, that is not your baseline. That is your average. That's the average that you're looking for. The average rate or the average volume you're looking for is -12 dB. And that means that, or -15. And that means that when someone shouts or there's an explosion and you want something to really pop for the listener, you are allowed, from -12, there's this relative, you know, there's a relative ratio there of, oh my gosh, something just exploded and made a noise that's -1 decibels. Isn't that loud? Well, yes, it is, because you've set your volume on your television to negative, or yeah, to negative 12, or rather, you have set it for a volume that at negative, that sounds at negative 12 dB are sounding listenable to you. That's your comfortable volume for what you're listening to. And then suddenly something explodes on screen and it's negative 1. Well, wow, that blows you out of your seat, because that's a lot louder now through your speakers than what you had anticipated. And in film, that level is negative 15 dB, because there's an expectation that you just have a little bit more volume to play with in a big theater. That's just what, you know, people expect, for the explosions to be that much louder, and so you have a little bit more of a playground there, a bigger spectrum to mess around with. That way you can have pops of laser guns or something that are, or clashes of laser swords that are at this volume, and then explosions that go up even higher. So you got more room to design within. And of course, whispers, if your normal speaking voice is around negative 15 dB or negative 12 dB, whatever, then your whispers would go down to like negative 17, negative 18, something like that. Well, apparently there's this thing called the DBFS, a decibel for full spectrum, or decibels full spectrum, yeah, something like that. And what that is talking about is, okay, well, there's this decibel rating, there's this measurement of sound, but the thing that we are measuring has a hard ceiling to it. And that is true in digital audio. In analog audio, you can do lots of different things, and in fact, sometimes that would occur. You'd have really intense sounds, so much so that it would literally break a speaker. If you've ever played a musical instrument and plugged it into an amp, then you may have experienced that. A power cord, or just something, you know, plugging into an amp that you forgot to turn down, and there's a big electrical pop to it, that can actually damage the speaker. And that's because these are pure sound waves being sent from one thing to another. There's nothing recreating that sound wave. It is just the force of sound that is occurring well, and being amplified and so on. But there's no ceiling there. It can be as loud as physics allows it to be. Whereas digital audio is different. What we're doing is we're essentially programming in sound waves, and then we're requesting for the digital object to recreate those sound waves in some way. And so in digital audio, just as in digital video, there's a level at which the digital recreation just has no more space for definition. It doesn't know what to do with data beyond a certain point. And for digital audio, that is zero decibels. That's the peak. That's as loud as you can go in digital audio, and then it starts getting clipped. Just as in digital video, at a certain point of whiteness, you simply peak out. There's no brighter that something could get than all lights on the pixels are on. It's 255, 255, and 255. That's it. So there's a ceiling to these things, because we're recreating them digitally. And DBFS recognizes that and says, well, we are going to work within this parameter from negative DBFS up to really zero would be the hard ceiling. But what normalize shoots for is a negative 6 generally. So it's going to typically peak out at negative 6, and it's going to keep the average sound level at around negative 12. And that's what it goes for, and that's what it does. And I would play you the results of normalize on a bunch of different sound files, but I don't believe, because this file itself, the one that you're hearing right now, but that I'm recording right now in your past, this file will be normalized. Well, actually it won't be normalized, but we'll talk about that in a moment. It will be adjusted before you hear it. And so you'd be hearing the results of normalize, which would be then processed, and that wouldn't make any sense. So I'm not going to bother you with sounds, with the results of normalize, but it is worth having a play with if you are creating a podcast yourself, or audio files yourself, and you think, well, maybe there is some optimization I could do here. Although I'm going to say, honestly, normalize, it's good. It's an effective little command. It's not great for raw audio, to be honest. It's really something that is, I think, better for audio that has been processed already. It's been mastered and released, and it's in its prime optimum state. You just happen to want to put five of them together. They weren't mastered together. So you then, you have different levels, right? And albums know this. One collection of of songs, an album, when they take it into mastering, into that last step before, you know, when they lay all those tracks down onto whatever media they're laying it down onto, hard drive these days, they know that they want, as you put on the album, you should be able to just adjust your volume to one thing for yourself, whatever's comfortable for your ears. It's different for different people and different occasions. And then you shouldn't have to adjust that volume anymore. And so they know that they're aware of this when they're making albums, and they do that intentionally. And they kind of settle on the average sound that makes sense for that album. And it's different for different albums, right? If it's a soft, lilting, gentle synth pad ambient album, then quite possibly that average sound will be higher because they know that they just don't peak out all that much. They don't have the big snaps of snare drums or blasts of trumpets. That's not a concern for them. They know that it's going to be consistent and steady, and so they may just decide, well, we'll have our baseline set at -6, and that'll be it. And maybe there'll be some peaks here and there a little bit as volumes do have variation. Different sounds will swell, and it'll go up. It'll start to get near -1 dB, but that's as loud as it'll ever get. And so it's not a big deal. We don't have to adjust. We don't have to offset anything. Whereas a pop album with lots of drum beats and maybe guitar things happening and maybe people screaming 1 minute and whispering another minute, then they have to bring that sort of average down to accommodate for the loud bits and the soft bits. So normalize, when it does its work, it analyzes the sound file and figures out what the loudest portion of it would be and what the softest portion will be, and it adjusts the sound waves based on that analysis. Now you can have it not do that, and the way that you would do that is the --- peak option, which tells it to adjust just by peak level. Don't use loudness analysis. Don't try to get a feel for like the average volume of the song. Just look at the peaks and make sure that the loudest it gets never goes above -6 dB. I would say, generally speaking, that's not what you would probably want, because generally speaking, I think you would want the average to be consistent across your mixtape, as it were. So the normal use of normalize, I think, the intended sort of catch-all use would be normalize, and then maybe a limiter if you're nervous about that. But really, I think it would just be normalize, and then the name of the sound file, or the name of the sound files, plural. And if you want to see what normalize would do before it actually does it, you can pass --no-adjust, and that'll look at the sound file. It will tell you, in fact, I'll do that right now, normalize --no-adjust, and I'm gonna send it this arbitrary sound file and see what it does. And it scans through it, and then it gives me the computed levels. It says that the level is going to be -12, the peak is going to be 0, and the gain is going to be 0.19. So it's going to apply 0.19 gain to get it to this level. And that's basically pretty expected. The peak is a lot louder than I would have expected, actually. But maybe that's I don't know. Maybe that's just what it calculated. So it does kind of tell you what it's doing. Now you can kind of intervene. So you could do limiter --limiter, and then tell it, well, I really only want the peak to go up to -3 dB/fs, and it will process it, ensuring that the peak doesn't go over -3, or you could do -1, whatever, however dangerously you want to live. You can also set the amplitude. So there's the target amplitude, which again, normally that's -12 dB, but we could do amplitude --amplitude, Amplitude. Okay, got it. I wanted to put two T's in there for some reason. And we'll say, let's do negative 12 dB, or negative 15 dB. It does not like that. That's interesting. Oh, I know why. It's because I put a space between the negative 15 and the dBFS. So I'll take that space away and hit return again. Okay, so now we get the same calculation. The level is negative 12, the peak is 0, but the gain that it's going to apply is negative 2, which mostly makes sense because before, when it was shooting for 12, it was doing a gain of 0.19, and now it's doing a gain of negative 2.8054 dB. So that sounds about right to me. So you have a little bit of control over there. I'm still not really sure why the peak is showing up as 0. That's really interesting. I'm not entirely sure why the limiter isn't. Maybe I'll do limit to 8, negative 8, just to see what happens. No, it keeps the peak at 0. So I'm not sure if it's telling me. I'm not sure if this output is telling me the current peak that it found is at 0. That must be what it's saying. It must be telling me that the current level is negative 12, the peak is 0, and the gain is negative. The gain that would be applied were I to run this is a negative 2. That kind of makes some sense. So anyway, I've never actually looked at this. I've always run it, and I never actually looked at the no adjust output, as far as I can recall. And I did use this. I used this quite a lot back during a time when I was making these podcasts, and I was trying to create them in segments. So I would record one segment, and then the next segment, and then the next segment, and then I would string them together. I would normalize them, string them together, and that was the show. And, I mean, that did work for a while, and I didn't mind it, but I just found myself being too much of an editor. Even, I was trying to get away from editing, because I wanted the show to be quicker to record. And nowadays, I just kind of edit as I go. So, when I make a mistake, I stop, I delete the mistake, and then I keep going. And that's how I keep myself from editing. I edit sort of in real time, more or less, and that's how I got around that. And in so doing, in moving everything to production and avoiding post, I discovered that I was getting a lot better results without this normalized tool, because this normalized tool is not a compressor, it's not a gate, it is simply a normalized tool. And what that means, if you don't use a compressor and a gate, if you've never had the pleasure, then that there's no awareness in this normalized command of when to stop increasing, of when not to increase a volume. So in other words, in a recording, you'll hear that you have a noise floor. And that's an expected thing. It happens everywhere. People try to minimize that as much as possible by dampening their recording environment, which I have not done in any way. And it's kind of a cool idea, though. I wonder if I could get a sound booth constructed in here. That would be really neat. That would be very cool. Anyway, people do that with sound dampening. You see the egg carton foam. It's not really an egg carton, but it's foam that looks kind of like an egg carton. You've seen it in movies, at least, or videos. And so there's this noise floor. And so ideally, your volume adjustment tool of choice would learn and not... It wouldn't actually learn. You would dictate it. You would set a threshold, and you would tell it, look, once you get down to like negative 36, negative 40 range, just don't raise that. Just leave that at negative 30 or negative 40 or whatever. That is called a gate, or even very, very commonly, it's called a noise gate. And it simply says, hey, if something is under a certain threshold, don't touch that. Or if you have it, on some gates, you can say anything below that threshold, cramp, reduce it even further, like force that down. So normalize doesn't do that. It simply looks at the overall volume and it says, okay, well, we need to get this to negative 12 dBFS. Let's do it. And that's what it does. It has awareness of peaks of how loud you're getting. So it's a wee bit, a little bit, not really like a compressor. It's really, it mostly just has the ability to limit, which I think, I would have to look up the specifications anew. I haven't really thought about this. It's either that limiters are functions of compressors or compressors are functions of limiters. I'm feeling like the limiter would have to be a function of a compressor, because that would be Okay, over a certain thing, apply. Yeah, it's got to be a limiter is essentially a finely tuned and hyper specific function of a compressor. Anyway, doesn't really matter. Point is, normalize doesn't do the noise gate function. It does not know about that. And so when you after you normalize an audio file, you can load it into some visualizer like Audacity or something. Look at those sound waves, look at it in the decibel view. And you'll see that noise floor has been increased. So all the room tone around you that you don't want is now louder along with the rest of your signal. And if you take that same file before you normalize it, bring it into something like Audacity, apply a compressor to it, then you might find that the noise floor has been unaffected because the compressor in Audacity has a gate function. So the noise floor will be unaffected, but everything else above it, or it will be less affected either way, depends on what you've set. And everything above it has been increased. What normalize also does not do, and I don't imagine you would want this anyway, but well, maybe you would, maybe you would. Normalize does not take quiet parts of the audio and raise them to be closer to the louder parts of the audio. That's not what normalize does. That's more of a leveling function. That's not what normalize is all about. So really, honestly, normalize, it takes an audio file, it analyzes its loudness, and then it makes that loudness closer to the average of, by default, -12 dB. Simple. And the options that you have when interfacing with normalize are amplitude to override what the target amplitude is. Batch. This is useful because this will analyze a bunch of files, right? Dash B or dash dash batch. You feed it a bunch of files, it gets the levels of all of the files, and then it figures out what average volume would be optimal for them all to sort of, fit in together. Dash dash clipping, you allow normalize to clip audio signals. I don't know why you would want that. I would imagine it would be something where the sound, it just needs to be normalized no matter what. Maybe you're doing transcription or something and you just need to hear all the voices more or less equally. Something like that, I don't know. Dash dash fractions, display levels as fractions of maximum amplitude instead of decibels. That's interesting. Dash dash gain. So that tells it don't compute the level, just apply this adjustment. So it is a way for you to force gain onto an audio file, which is useful. That's useful. That means that if you have an audio file and you want to increase its volume across the board, no matter what, you can do a dash dash gain and then some adjustments, and normalize will apply that gain for you. Dash dash limiter limits all samples above a certain level. By default, this is -6. Like I say, you could pump that up to like -1 if you wanted to. Not really any harm in doing that, to be honest. It's going to be a little bit louder that way. 0 decibels would be, of course, the ceiling. You cannot get above that level in digital. You'll hear a bunch of distortion if you do. Dash dash mix is mix mode. Get the average of all levels and normalize the volume of each file to that average. I don't know how that is different from batch, except that batch specifically says get average of all levels and use one adjustment based on the average level for all files, whereas mix get average of all levels and normalize volume of each file to the average. Oh, I see how that's different now. Yes, reading it out loud is useful. Okay, so that there's batch and mix. Dash dash no adjust, already done that, right? We saw that earlier. You run that, you get a report on what would happen, but it doesn't actually apply any of those changes. So it's a dry run essentially. Dash dash peak, adjust by peak level instead of using loudness analysis. Let's see, anything interesting. Dash dash average dash threshold when computing average level, ignore any levels more than some decibels from average. So that's kind of interesting. That is kind of nice. That's almost a little bit like a compressor, it sounds like. So when computing the average level, ignore any levels more than, well, it's not a compressor. It's more like, well, it's lying about the average, essentially. It's ignoring some things when calculating the average. Adjust threshold. Don't bother applying any adjustments smaller than some number of decibels. So if something's good enough, then or if something's close enough, it's good enough. Dash dash output dash bit width. For suggested files to have some bit of samples, I don't think I would use normalized for that personally. And that's about it. That's normalized. I mean, I guess it's nice that you can adjust the bit width of a file with normalized. I just feel like that's going one step too far in the do one thing, or that's maybe going, well, it one thing, doing it, do one thing, do it well, normalizes audio well. I don't know that I would use it for a bit width adjustment personally. It's just me. Anyway, normalize. It's a nice little application. It's useful to have. It's just not as flexible, I think, as probably I would want it to be for audio production. And it really doesn't make a claim to be intended for that. It somewhere, I think it said, man, normalize. I want to feel like, yeah, it's used to adjust the volume of wave audio files to a standard volume level. This is useful for things like creating MP3 mixes, where different recording levels on different albums can cause the volume to vary greatly from song to song. So that is its self-stated purpose, and I don't know that I would be using it for audio production simply because, or if I did, that would be one command in a series of lots and lots of other commands, because this isn't granular enough, I don't think, for production use. Okay, that's normalized. Let's go get a cup of coffee, and then we'll come back and we'll talk about PA Mixer. And we're back. Hopefully you've gotten a cup of coffee. We're ready to talk about PA Mixer. PA Mixer is the Pulse Audio Mixer command, and it doesn't have a man page, so you can do a PA Mixer dash dash help and get a couple of different options. Some of them are what I'll call, I guess, diagnostic, and then and others are actual settings. So for instance, if we start actually from the bottom, we can do list sources, PA Mixer dash dash list sources. And it tells you, okay, well, you got 0 output analog surround 5.1 monitor of built-in audio analog surround 5.1. 1, also input analog stereo, built-in audio analog stereo, also output Plantronics, monitor of Plantronics.audio 626 DSP analog stereo. And then 3, also Plantronics.audio 626 DSP analog stereo. There you go. Those are the sources of audio for my system right now. If I do list dash syncs, that's S-I-N-K-S. That's not S-Y-N-C-S. It is S-I-N-K-S, and we'll talk about that in a moment. 0, also output, also surround 5.1, so that's built-in audio analog surround 5.1. And then 1 is Plantronics.audio 626 DSP analog stereo. You may wonder what a sync and a source is, and that is a fair question. So a sync is a place where sound can get sent to. And I'm saying it that way in I'm saying that deliberately. I'm not saying sync is an output. It essentially is. But I'm saying that significantly, syncs are a place where audio can be sent to, and sources are a place where audio comes from. And the reason I'm saying it in such a weird way, and I believe probably the reason it is expressed, you know, that these terms are being used in PA Mixer and Pulse Audio in general, is for the same reason, and that is because output and input we have very specific understandings of what that would mean, which you think might be a useful thing, you know, that we have conventions that actually help us understand these things. And so why are we creating a new one called sync and source? And I'll agree that it is a little bit of there is some confusion there. However, if you think about where Pulse Audio came from, or even better yet, what Pulse Audio is, let's say correcting, then you have, for instance, balsa, and that's, I guess that's not really what it's replacing. It's theoretically replacing ESD, Enlightened Sound Demon, which I was never even fully aware of, even though it was probably something that I used early on in Linux. But there was a setup at one point where you had a speaker. Maybe it was your headphones. Maybe it was a speaker that you had plugged into your computer. Maybe it was a speaker that came bundled with your computer because your computer's a laptop, so you just have speakers built in. You don't know how it's connected. They're just there. And that's your output device. Audio is output through that device. The way it worked before Pulse came along was that you had this device, and if you wanted to send sound to the device, you would select it in a volume mixer of some sort, or you would tell your application, hey, play sound through that device. And that application would grab hold of that device for itself. It would send sound to that device, and the sound would play, provided that that device and that application are both sort of talking the same language, or rather, are providing the information to one another that the other one needs. So for instance, if you had this sound device that could only play, I don't know, up to a certain bit rate, and your application was feeding it sound of a different bit rate, then there would be a problem. You wouldn't be able to, there would be an error. You would get an error. I can't play this sound through that device. The conversion that needs to happen just isn't happening. Now, there are libraries out there and little intermediary daemons that could translate accordingly so that you didn't run into that all that often. What you would more often run into in practice was a conflict of sort of device ownership. And that would occur when you would have one application that was grabbing hold of a device, of an output device, and another one would then try to also output through that device, and you couldn't have that. That wouldn't work. And boy, was that annoying. And that would happen fairly frequently, where you would have something dominating some device, and then you'd launch like Firefox and try to play a sound through Firefox, and it just wouldn't play. Couldn't do that. I don't remember if that was a problem with the way that Firefox wasn't viewing sound devices correctly, or whether it was a failing of the sound system at the time. I don't remember. Also, to be fair, was pretty good at regulating all of those different things. But if you keep going far enough back, then you run into sound systems that predate ALSA, and they just couldn't handle it. It was a very one-to-one kind of relationship, and it was problematic. I could have some of the details there wrong. I came in to Linux once ALSA already existed, and it's pretty nice. It's a pretty good little sound system, but it's not quite as flexible as something like Pulse. And Pulse, essentially, it spins up a server, a sound server, and it listens for sound signals, whether they are coming from a source or whether they're requests to send audio to a specific sync. And it can do all of those things. So in other words, it is kind of a hub where a bunch of signals can go and then get sorted appropriately. Ownership of each device is claimed by Pulse itself, and so other applications don't have to fight for ownership of the device. They just blindly send a signal to Pulse, and Pulse figures out where everything needs to go. It's a really big deal, honestly. If this is one of those strangely controversial technologies in Linux that I will never understand the controversy for. This is such a good thing for Linux to have. This is the kind of first-class user experience that anyone in their right mind would expect. Not to say that if you don't like Pulse, you're not in your right mind. More likely, the situation is that you are not the target audience for Pulse. And I understand that that is a thing, absolutely a thing. Like, on certain devices where all I do is maybe, I don't know, do graphics or something, or write code, then maybe I wouldn't want Pulse on those devices. I would hope that the modularity of Linux is retained strong enough for that to be possible. Although from what I understand, and again, haven't actually looked into this, but from what I can tell, Bluetooth apparently, basically like the Bluetooth library that makes Bluetooth work on Linux, is sort of apparently like hard-coded for Pulse. And In the end, Slackware 14.2, which is what I'm running now, and if you're running Slackware, it's probably what you're running now. Well, unless you're running current, I guess, but still, that's still arguably 14.2. It's just a progression on top of that. The reason that it has Pulse included in it, the only reason it has Pulse included in it, is because Bluetooth demanded that Pulse be present on the system. And that's a little bit annoying, because let's imagine that you are just doing graphics or just code on a device, but you're using a Bluetooth keyboard or a Bluetooth mouse or something, I don't know. Actually, you know what? No, that's true. I was going to say, don't they usually have dongles that kind of voids that necessity anyway? But I don't think that's true. Some of them don't have dongles. Then you wouldn't be able to use Bluetooth, as I understand it, without also loading Pulse. And that would be annoying and disappointing, frankly. But I don't know that we could blame Pulse necessarily for that so much as the compile options for libblues or whatever it is. I have not messed around with that myself, so I'm speaking very theoretically based on what I think I remember reading in the changelog of Slackware some 6 years ago. Take all of that with a grain of salt. Point is, I think Pulse is great. I think it's a really, really useful system. And I don't understand why anyone would ever hate it. But I understand that some people do hate it, so it's okay. So PA Mixer --list syncs is telling me all the places where sound can be directed right now. Now, if I, for instance, speaking of Bluetooth, I can connect this little Bluetooth speaker that I got as swag from a particularly nice group of open source people that I'm involved with. If I connect that to my system, just waiting for it to connect. Did I ever tell you how much I hated Bluetooth, by the way? I'm not sure if I've ever mentioned that on this show. Cannot stand Bluetooth. Okay, so I've just spent about 10 minutes fiddling with the wonders of Bluetooth, and here we go. So now I do PA Mixer --list-syncs, and I've got 0 as my built-in audio, 2, 1 as my Plantronics headset, which is how you're hearing me right now, but this is a sync, remember, so you're hearing me through the source side of Plantronics. You are not hearing me through the sync side. I would, if I played this audio back to myself, then I would hear it through the sync. And then finally, 2 is blues_sync, which is orig-audio-bt, which is this, I couldn't get the speaker to connect. So I connected some Bluetooth headphones, which was also some free swag. You get a lot of Bluetooth swag lately, I don't know why. And not during 2020, obviously, that would be crazy. That was previous years at technical conferences, I got those. So anyway, point is that we're seeing now in the report of PA Mixer that there are new devices available. I can, through PA Mixer, affect these devices one way or another. So for instance, I could increase the volume of a device. So that would be PA Mixer --increase or -i if you're lazy. And then the argument of whatever thing that you want to increase. And the way that you would define what you want to affect is either a --sync and then the index number of a sync, or --source and then the index number of the source. So for instance, if I do PA Mixer --increase 2, let's say, and then we'll do a --sync, and I'm going to affect this new headphone that I've just plugged in or connected through Bluetooth, and so that'll be a sync 2. And hit return, and it silently does a thing. How do we know what it's done? Well, you could certainly look at your volume control in your GUI if you happen to remember where the volume was set for that device. I don't. So instead, we could get that through this command, PA Mixer --get-volume, and then --sync, and then 2, because that's the device that I want to get information on. Looks like it's set at 63 right now, so let's Control-P back up to PA Mixer --increase. Let's do an increase of 10, --sync 2, so that does it. And then PA Mixer --get-volume, --sync, -2. And now it's set at 73, which is obviously exactly what we would expect. You could do the opposite. You can do a --decrease or just -d and then some value. You can mute with a --toggle-mute or just -t to toggle mute on, mute off. If you know that it's on and you want to just mute it quickly, you could just do PA Mixer -m or --mute and then --sync. 2, and then that would mute that device. If you want to live dangerously and go above 100% volume. You can do a dash dash allow dash boost. You can determine whether you are muted, dash dash get dash mute, and you could set directly a volume, dash dash set dash volume. Just, you want to set it to 10, dash dash set dash volume 10, dash dash sync 2, and then that would change that. In other words, this is, and that's honestly about, that's about it. That's all the, that's about all the options that this thing has. It is clearly, I think, a very intuitive command. Once you get sort of the feeling, you start to guess things, you know? Well, what if I wanted to mute it? Dash dash set dash mute? No, that wasn't it. How about just dash dash mute? Oh, yep, that's it. I mean, it's that simple, and I love commands like that. I know that not all commands can be like that, because a lot of commands, you know, it's kind of a guessing game at some point of what an option should be called. But boy, it's nice when they are like this. You get the feel for this command immediately. And I think this is one of those things where when you type in man PA mixer and you don't get anything, well, that's not good. PA mixer dash dash help. Oh, that's why I didn't need a manual, because it's really easy to use. I think that's, there's a certain beauty to this, and that's what's going on here. Now, there's no, the one thing, I guess, that it's important to note that this does not do is, this doesn't, this isn't your mix. I mean, it is a mixer, but this is not PA vol control or whatever that horribly named, what is it, PAVU control, PAVU control. Don't know why they thought PAVU control made sense, but that's what they named it. It's a great application. If you haven't tried PAVU control, then you should definitely take a look. It is your interface to Pulse Audio. That is your gateway into Pulse Audio directly. You want to check that out. Interestingly, you might even say strangely, on GNOME, I don't think this is a thing. PAVU control, I don't think it even exists. Which is weird, because PAVU control, when you launch it, at least on a KDE system, to me, to my eyes at least, that looks just like a GNOME application invading your KDE space. It looks really, really obviously not of a KDE. I don't know if it's just gone away and it's just been merged into GNOME settings, or whether GNOME settings is essentially a front, or the sound settings is sort of a front end to PAVU control, and it's just kind of rearranged its widgets or what. Doesn't really matter. It's just, it is a thing that I notice when I'm on GNOME at work and I go to my sound panel. I just think, oh my gosh, this is not what I'd expected. This is different. It's just as effective. I don't have any complaints about it. I'm just saying it is different. And I believe there was a time where it was not different. I could be misremembering. So it could just be that PAVU control is an artifact of, you know, of Pulse, whatever version of Pulse I have on 14.2 that was released 4, 5, 10 years ago now. I don't even know when Slackware 14.2 came out. I think it was right before I moved here to New Zealand, so maybe that would be going on 7 years ago. Either way, point is, PAVU control lets you look at, for instance, the... Well, I won't do that one. How about... not that one either. I won't do it, but I'll talk about it. So you can go to the recording, for instance, and in this case, Audacity shows up there because it's the active stream. And I could click on the selector and tell it to stop using Plantronics as input and use some other, what would it be, a sync or a source? If you said source, you have learned much about Pulse Audio, or you already knew it. I could use a different source for the audio that is getting sent to Pulse and then distributed out into Audacity through an ALSA plugin, by the way. It's a lot of routing that goes on there, and this is exactly the beauty of Pulse. You want this, you want that. That is something that you want. And I know a lot of people say, well, we had that with Jack. And we did. It just, for whatever reason, Jack was not about system control. Jack was a purpose-built application. I don't still quite know why Jack was not a suitable solution for what Pulse delivers. I remember when Pulse first came out, a lot of people said that very explicitly. Why do we need Pulse when we already have Jack? And I never really understood why. The people over at Jack were just like, oh, well, we don't do that. We're not a system demon. We're Jack. So I don't know, you know, what exactly the difference really is. Functionally, it seems like if we could have integrated Jack deep down into the system, that would have made sense. But I don't know. Either way, what we ended up with Pulse in the end was quite nice. And I will also admit freely, because I had to live through it along with everyone else, early Pulse was not modern Pulse. Pulse in the early days was painful. And I don't know that it was necessarily Pulse that was painful or everything else on Linux that hadn't been built for Pulse. But either way, whatever it was, there were a lot of there was a lot of growth and a lot of pain early on. And I mean, you'll still run into it from time to time. You'll still have problems. I mean, to this day, if I'm doing audio work on Slackware, sometimes when I plug in a device, it will be intercepted by, I guess, Pulse, and it won't get sent on through to Jack, and then I have to issue a special command to enable that device to be seen by Jack. It can be a little bit annoying, the sort of conflict in sound systems, but overall, for like 96% of requirements, Pulse is absolutely fantastic. It lets you juggle sound around your system. It generally does it flawlessly. When I am annoyed by Pulse, it is usually because I have forgotten to plug something in, or because some other system is not working, like when I was just trying to connect the stupid speaker that normally works when I'm not recording, it works fine, wouldn't connect to Bluetooth, so it doesn't show up in Pulse. You can't really blame Pulse for that, and you know, it's not Pulse's fault. So, Pulse, it's good. PA Mixer adds power to Pulse, so definitely check that out next time you're sitting around and cannot be bothered to take your hand off the keyboard to go to the mouse to adjust the volume. You can do that now. PA Mixer is the answer, and that's really, really nice. Okay, I know you probably thought we were done for this episode, but honestly, this one's really quick. PM-util, that is Power Management Utilities, I think. It's got two commands in it. There's on AC power, and PM is supported. Those are the two commands. They are, I think, arguably very very obvious as to what they do, and quite limited as to what they do. It is a pure convenience type of commands. They're both shell scripts, so if you go to your user bin folder and take a look, you'll see exactly what they're doing, and they're really not doing a whole lot. It is absolutely, this is just one of those really nice convenience things. And this way you don't have to figure this stuff out for yourself. These are by, I guess, originally Stefan Seyfried and Peter Jones and Richard Hughes. Richard Hughes, you may or may not know if you're into color management. And I think, actually, he might do the Software Center on GNOME as well. I'm not 100% sure. I don't exactly remember. Either way, really simple little shell scripts, and their use is maybe not exactly what you might expect. I don't know. So PM-is-supported. That is the name of the command, one of the commands, one of the two commands. And then you have, so if you just type that in, then it tells you you have three options: suspend, hibernate, or suspend hybrid. And so you can check to see which of those is supported. So you can do --suspend. Interestingly, it doesn't do anything. That's exactly what it's PM is supported --suspend, and now I'm back at my prompt. What kind of nonsense is that? Well, the point is that you can now pipe it in through either an and or, and that's an ampersand or a pipe to get a response depending on what you get. So in this case, I'm going to do an and echo is supported, and of course I could even do pipe and do echo is not supported, close quote. So I do that, PM is supported, --suspend, and echo is, and echo, or echo not, so I get is supported. So suspend is supported on this system, that's nice. What about hibernate? Hibernate is supported on this system. Wow, this is pretty cool, I didn't even actually know any of this. Suspend-hybrid is supported. So I'm getting a lot of positives here. So I could, in theory, now do like a PM-suspend, I think is the name of the command. No. Suspend. Just suspend, I guess. And then it would suspend my system. I'm not going to do that. I'm in the middle of recording. So that's kind of nice to know. What about on AC power? Well, that one, bizarrely, is on _AC_power. So the other one is dash, this one is underscore. I don't know why they would have that would have been the default. But we can do essentially the same thing. We can do an echo yes on AC power. Well, just yes on AC, how's that? So yes, we are on AC power. And I happen to know that that's true because this is my desktop and I don't have a battery for it. So there you go. It would be interesting to see what would happen if the power, now surely that would, yeah, that would still, I was trying to get a false reading by turning off all the power in this house and just going off of my, my battery backup here and seeing what it would tell me. But surely it wouldn't read that. That's an external battery. So to it, yes, it's still on AC. All right, there you go. That's pm-util, and that's it. So there are some README files in the documentation. There's one from Robbie Workman who tells you how to do what I just did, except he does it more gracefully because he's got a loop in there that checks all three things and returns what it tells you or what it has found. And that's it, pm-util. So we knocked through I guess three packages today instead of just the two. So next time we'll take a look at PowerTop and QPDF and maybe a couple others. Maybe we'll get to Radeon Tool. Probably can do Radeon Tool pretty quickly because I don't have a Radeon card, so that would be going pretty quickly for me. Anyway, that's it for this episode. I will talk to you next week. Thank you for listening to the GNU World Order Ogcast. This has been Klaatu. You can reach me on IRC. I'm on the Freenode network usually in channels such as Ogcast Planet, Slacker Media, Slackware, a couple of others. My nick on IRC is not Klaatu. You can also reach me lately on Mastodon. My username there is @Klaatu, @mastodon.xyz. Of course, you can email me at klaatu@member.fsf.org. That's klaatu@member.fsf, as in Free Software Foundation.org. And of course, you can visit my various websites, gnuworldorder.info and slackermedia.info. I will see you next time.